Chapter 13. I went back to the Sioux the next day. I needed to try out this idea, to say it out loud, hear myself saying it, see someone else's reaction to it, someone I could trust. I parked on Portage Avenue, a busy street on this day, one of the last days of the tourist season. The freighters would keep running until the weather closed them down for the winter, but today was one last chance to walk through the Locks Park without a warm coat. I knew people came from all over to see these 700-footers go through the locks. I don't totally understand the attraction, but then I live just up the bay, so I see these boats all the time. I walked into the Sioux Brewing Company. The air was heavy, and the front window was steamed up, but enough light came through to make the furniture in the seating area look even further past its prime, although I suppose the lingering aroma of the hops more than made up for it. Leon appeared from the back room, dragging a large metal trash can.
"Alex," he said, when he saw me. "Two visits in 2 days. I knew this beer would win you over."
"You need help with that?"
"I got it, but I bet you can't guess where it's going."
I looked into the trash can and saw nothing but a soggy mass of grain. "I'm guessing the dumpster out back?"
"Hell no. This is from the mash tun. It's going to the buffalo ranch so they can feed it to the herd."
"The buffalo ranch?"
"Down toward Pigford, yeah. You've seen them."
"If you say so," I said. Then I saw his coffee on the counter and realized I desperately needed one myself.
"I've got a pot going," he said, before I could even ask. "I'll get you a cup."
A couple of minutes later, we were sitting in the front room on the beat-up couch. The cushions were shot, and I knew it would be a battle to get back on my feet. But for now, I was comfortable. I took a sip of coffee.
"You don't look like you slept a whole lot," he said to me.
I shook my head.
"I imagine the story you told me last night has something to do with that."
"I'm not exactly sure how I know this," I said, "or why I didn't know it until now, all these years later. But I believe we put away an innocent man."
"You believe this based on what?"
"Well, based at least partly on something I thought of in the middle of the night. You're the one I always come to when I need help seeing something clearly, right?"
"I try."
"You do more than try. You have a gift for it. You cut through all the clutter that gets in the way, and you go right to the one thing that makes it all fit together. I've seen you do it over and over again."
"You're flattering me now, but go ahead."
"When I was telling you what happened at the train station, when I was chasing Daryl King down the tracks, you stopped me and you asked me a question. Do you remember what it was?" He thought about it for a few seconds.
"I asked you," he said, "why the young man threw away the bracelet and not the knife."
"Right, which is exactly the same question I asked Detective Bateman when he told me the story."
"What was his answer?"
"His answer was the kid threw away the knife later, after he got home, or he just wasn't thinking straight at the moment, or whatever. It really doesn't matter, because the whole question is just one of those things that gets in the way of us seeing the situation clearly." He nodded his head slowly.
"Okay."
"So that's what I realized last night. I was asking that question when I should have been asking something else." He raised his eyebrows, waiting for it. "Why throw away anything?" I said. "What good does it do?"
"It's incriminating. It's a natural reaction to throw it away. When you were chasing somebody with drugs, you must have seen
them throw away bags of crack." "Yes, I saw that all the time. We'd go pick it up after the arrest, and inevitably they'd say, 'Oh, no, officer, that's not mine. I don't know where that came from.'"
"So it's the same idea here," he said. "The kid had the bracelet, so while you were chasing him, he threw it away."
"Exactly. Now you've got it."
"Got what? We're back where we started, aren't we?"
"No," I said. "Now we're somewhere else. Look." I noticed that he had his cell phone clipped to his belt, so I reached over and grabbed it from him. "I just took your cell phone," I said. "It's much nicer than mine, after all. It probably even works up here sometimes. So now I'm going to leave before I get caught, right?"
"Yeah."
"But wait, here comes a cop, so I'm going to throw it away." I tossed it under the table.
It wasn't me, officer. I have no idea how that cell phone got on that table.
He looked at the phone, then at me.
Now, let's say I just killed you, I said, and I happened to take your cell phone while I was at it. Here comes that cop. What am I going to do? If I'm still carrying around the freaking murder weapon, do you think I'm even thinking about the stupid cell phone at that point?
No, he said, grabbing his phone from the table. No, you're not.
Daryl King threw away that bracelet because he had just committed the crime of taking it. So when I was chasing him, he naturally threw it away. He was disassociating himself from the crime, which I realize sounds like something you would say. Maybe you're rubbing off on me.
If you look at it as a simple robbery, you mean...
Then it all makes sense, yes. He does exactly what you'd expect him to do.
So, he doesn't throw away the knife because he doesn't have a knife.
Leon sat back on the couch and thought about this. I could tell he was really working it over. He started to say something, stopped himself, started again, then stopped.
But it is possible...
If you make up that story in your head, you can make him throw away the bracelet and keep the knife, yes. I suppose in some cases somewhere it's actually happened that way. People do things that don't make any sense.
But in this case...
In this case, I think he found a dead body. She wasn't dead for long because we know from the forensics that she was killed right around that same time. But he goes up there and he sees the bracelet and he takes it. Because at that point, why not? Then he leaves, and I show up and start chasing him.
So he throws it away,
Leon said, still thinking it over.
Not me. I didn't do it. I didn't take this from that dead woman up there.
I just sat there and watched him as he seemed to reenact the whole scene in his head.
Damn, he finally said. That feels right. It really does.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
It's completely unprovable, of course. Just one of those things you know in your gut. But now you try to put that up against the fact that he confessed.
We go back to that, yeah. Why would he just roll over and give up?
Instead of swearing up and down that he didn't kill her.
Well, he's getting out soon, I said. Maybe I can ask him. Leon looked at me.
You're really thinking of doing that?
I might. I don't know. It'll probably bug me forever if I don't.
That'll be one interesting conversation, he said. But wait a minute. Hold the phone.
What is it?
Alex, if this Daryl King of yours didn't kill that woman...
Then someone else did, I said. I realized that.
I would think that would keep me up at night, just as much as the thought of sending the wrong man to prison.
Well, thanks. Tonight I'm sure it will.
Seriously, what are you going to do about this? Somebody killed her and just walked away.
I didn't have an answer for that. Leon didn't have an answer either, not a real answer. I thanked him for listening to me. Then I let him get back to work. When I was outside again, I found myself walking through the iron gate to Locks Park. Another freighter was coming through the locks. People were standing around watching it, but it barely registered for me. I was too busy thinking about that dead woman left on that balcony in that train station, and a murderer with no face and no name who never paid the price for his crime. My honeymooners were gone from the last cabin, so I spent a couple of hours closing that up. Vinny came by for a few minutes, then left for his shift at the casino. The sun went down, and it started to get cold. The wind was blowing hard by the time I got to the Glasgow Inn. It was just me and Jackie and a few stragglers wandering in on their way up to the shipwreck museum. Jackie could tell something was bothering me. He put a cold Canadian on the table next to my chair and left me alone. I knew Leon was right about not being able to sleep, no matter how tired I was. But when I got back to my cabin, I gave it a try anyway. It was midnight, and I was just starting to doze off when I heard a loud knock on my door. I got up and opened it. It was Leon.
I'm sorry, he said. I had to come over. This can't wait.
Leon, what is it? What the hell's going on? I invited him in. He sat down at my table. He had a folder of papers with him. As he opened it, I saw notes and copies of news items.
I kept thinking about what you told me today, he said. I've been on the internet, looking up some stuff.
Like what? I sat down next to him.
I got thinking, he said, shuffling through his papers, that a murder like this is just so brutal, so extreme.
Yes?
Here's one, he said, holding up a printout from a newspaper website. Just read it.
I took it from him. From the Cleveland Plain Dealer, an interview with the chief of police. The man was talking about an unsolved murder in his city. A woman who had been stabbed 17 times in a hotel stairwell. I checked the date. 5 years after the murder of Elena Page.
I know every murder doesn't get solved and stabbings aren't that uncommon, but look at these two.
He handed me two more news items. One from the Chicago Sun-Times, another follow-up on a case that was still unsolved 6 months after it happened. A woman stabbed to death in a parking structure next to a mall, just outside Chicago. Then the other one, from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Yet another unsolved case, yet another woman stabbed multiple times, this time left outside, in a park overlooking Lake Michigan. So Cleveland, 5 years after Elena Page, then Chicago, 4 years after that, then Milwaukee, 3 years later. Each one of these crimes represented by a single sheet of paper on my table, here in this small cabin, hundreds of miles away from any of these crimes. And yet I knew all too well what lay behind the simple facts recited in the news stories. The terrible last moments of an innocent person's life, then families torn apart by grief.
It's possible there are more, Leon said. These are just the obvious ones I found in 5 minutes.
This doesn't have to be the same person, I said, spreading the pages back out on the table. Or if it was for these murders, it doesn't necessarily have to include Elena Page.
It doesn't have to, no. But what does your gut tell you right now?
I'm tired of my gut telling me things, I said. It's not always right, you know.
Sure. Maybe it's wrong this time. Maybe there's no connection. Hell, if Darryl King really did kill Elena Page, then you know there's no connection because he was in prison when these other murders were committed.
That's right, I said, honestly trying to convince myself. Outside, I could hear the cold wind still blowing, driving the last day of summer into oblivion.
So, what are you gonna do? He said.
I'm gonna try to sleep a few hours, I said, knowing it probably wouldn't happen. I was already starting to feel sick to my stomach. Then first thing tomorrow morning, I'm gonna call the one person who might have some answers.